Bum ba da bum 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 bum.
Hello and welcome to the NWR Newscast, episode number 45 for March 19th, 2011. I am your host this week. My name is Andy Gergen, and I am here with Mr. Zachary Miller. What's up, Zach?
Oh, not a whole lot, sir.
Welcome back, as always. We have a few missing voices this week. Neil is moving, and Nathan is studying. So to replace them with the combined strength of two is... Crosstalk proprietor Carl Castaneda. How's it going, Carl?
I am so tired. yeah.
That's probably pretty late for you.
It is late for me, and it's also the weekend after PAX East, and I am just tired.
Yeah, no kidding.
And
you guys had a blast from what I hear.
Yeah, we might have had too much fun.
The live panel for RFN went live on the site a few days ago, and... Yeah, it sounds like it was a pretty good time. I hope to attend one of those meetups in the future.
Well, I hope you come, Andy. I hope everyone who's listening decides to come because it was a really great time. We don't ever really say this enough, but the RFN crew is a really accessible bunch. When people come up to hang with us after the panel, we do hang out with them.
Yeah.
We actually, a listener and his girlfriend decided to come up to us after the panel and was like, hey, I know this really great place to get lunch, and we all went out to lunch. Like,
nice.
You know, we're not celebrities even by, you know, internet or PAX standards. we're just there to hang out, and if you want to come up and hang out with us, we're there to go. I mean, we have a really, really good time with our panels. We're very engaged with the audience. And so just know, if you come to PAX, you'll have the full RFN experience, whether you want to or not.
It will be forced upon you.
You'll be submerged in RFN.
Yeah, you'll just be soaked in it.
RFN.
Wait, I don't know what that means.
All over your face.
I redact that. Redacted.
I have just edited it out. You can't tell that already.
Okay.
So this week on the newscast, we're not going to give any concrete news stories. There hasn't been anything all that exciting as the march toward 3DS continues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of small things. Steel Diver is going to be delayed due to the earthquake in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad thing, but we're not really going to talk about that too much. Instead, we're going to look towards things that make us happy rather than things that depress us. So, Zach, why don't you kick us off this week by telling us all about the feature on the website that you are kicking off starting this week.
Starting tonight.
Starting tonight.
I should have the first article up tonight. It is the 15th anniversary of the original Resident Evil for the PlayStation 1. And we're going to be kicking off a feature where... You know, three members of the staff, me, you, and Pedro, all talk about Resident Evil memories and how you can get to it, and if you're a Nintendo fan, what games you can play in the series. So it's going to be really great, and I'm excited to see it on the site, and by the time this is up, it should be up, so check it out. But in planning this episode, since we have two people gone and there aren't really any news stories, we thought it would be fun to reminisce about our favorite horror games. And not necessarily Resident Evil, but, you know, Resident Evil E. I would say that all horror games released after Resident Evil have been largely inspired by Resident Evil.
I would say so, sure.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I think the classic haunted house scenario of Resident Evil has largely shaped the entire survival horror genre, but I'm not even sure survival horror is really a thing anymore.
I mean, yeah, I don't like that term myself. It almost feels like a mistranslation.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of really quality stuff in the, if you want to call it the survival horror genre, that came from PCs, especially in the early 90s.
Yes, Alone in the Dark, Phantasmagoria.
Alone in the Dark, yeah.
Shivers.
That's a good one.
Absolutely. Lots of really great stuff. But I think Resident Evil really popularized the genre, at least on consoles. And, yeah, there are so many great horror games to pick from. I don't know. Do we want to just go into some of our favorites, or?
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. Well, I think one of my favorites from recent memory has to be the first BioShock game.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Which I don't know if it's a straight up horror game, but it is nearly unmatched in crafting an amazing just atmosphere of being unsettled.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Whether
yes.
it's the way too cute, you know, lullaby songs that come up when everything around you is all deranged and crazy, the little girls with the glowy eyes, or if it's just the like the you know what really does it for, you know, as far as scaring me in that game, it's the audio diaries.
Yes, they really add to it.
There's something about found audio and found footage where you know things are about to go to shit and you're just kind of waiting for it that really freaks me out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I love it in BioShock, and this in BioShock 2 as well, where you find an audio diary and something terrible is happening, or it's like a parent. I think the example I'm thinking of is it's a parent recording an audio diary worrying about their daughter. And then you find out their daughter was turned into a little sister, and the parent, you find them in their apartment, and they committed suicide.
Right. Yeah. Or, you know, that's a really great example, because that happens a lot in BioShock, where you listen to an audio diary and then you see something around the environment that relates to that audio diary.
Right.
It's just like where, you know, you hear like a crash and a bang, and then you see like broken dishes around you and like blood on the counter, and it's like, it's really, really spooky. And
yeah.
These are all things that don't even directly tie into the gameplay or the story itself. They're just things that are around the environment. And I think that's what makes that series so special, in that they put so much effort into creating a world for the characters to inhabit.
Yeah.
To the point where I think someone mentioned that Rapture is really the main character of BioShock.
I totally agree.
I definitely think so. It's passive storytelling, which is sort of a weird trick to do, because you want to make sure that the story that's necessary to get told is told. And there's a lot of active storytelling in BioShock as well, especially with the whole Andrew Ryan stuff.
Sure.
But most of what makes that game interesting, and a lot, you know, that game is not unique in that. Like Metroid Prime does the same thing.
Yeah.
It's passive storytelling. It's storytelling that's there for you to observe, and you feel like it's more immersive when you do come across it, because it's something that you found, not something that was told to you.
Right.
Sure.
It's very effective.
You're learning the history of the city.
Yeah.
Right. And I think actually it's funny that you would say Metroid Prime, because I'd say that there are certain points in Metroid Prime 2 that do have elements of sort of survival horror. Maybe not so much in the scare angle, but where it develops this really creepy atmosphere, because, you know, most Metroid games you're playing, you're secluded, and there's that really weird thing of being secluded and knowing that something is off.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Prime games and Metroid in general, but I think that Echoes definitely has some of that in there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. I haven't played BioShock 2 yet. I've had it on my shelf. I've been borrowing it from someone that I work with.
It's an excellent game.
It's a while.
It's good. It's a good game. It fixes a lot of the issues that were in the first BioShock, but it brings some of its own issues to the table.
Have you played Minerva's Den?
I've not. No, I haven't played any of the DLC.
It's amazing. It's more like the first game in terms of the story.
I'll have to check that out.
It's really incredible.
I'll have to check that out, because I was a really big fan of the first BioShock.
Me too. And there are two sequences in the first BioShock that really put me on edge. The first one was in the theater level, when you go down these random stairs and you come into a flooded room. And do you know what I'm talking about? And there's a statue of a person just at the other end of the room, but there's also something on the ground. So you're like, oh, I'm going to go pick that up. And you go, and you're kind of expecting the person to pop out at you, like, this is probably going to happen, so you get ready to shoot him, but nothing happens. Well, you turn around, and one's running at you. And that is so effective. It was so great. And there, that whole area is freaky, because you don't realize that there are bodies in those statues, you know.
Is that the
that crazy theater guy?
Oh, the Cohen. What's his
name?
Yeah. I don't. It's been a while since I've played BioShock.
Yeah, but you whack those statues with your whatever your melee weapon is, they bleed. And when that, I first did that, I was like, oh, man, that's creepy.
No doubt.
I think that section of the game is probably my favorite. That whole moment with Cohen in his theater, I think that's probably the best part of the game.
It is. It's great. And then I just love the build-up of Andrew Ryan talking to you, and he's like, do you know who you're dealing with? I'm Andrew Ryan.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And you go into his office, even though he's not really in there, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. BioShock really develops this feeling of being watched and knowing that even when you're sneaking around, people are aware of your actions and they're sort of plotting.
That's true.
It creates a really immaculate sense of creepiness.
Paranoia.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It really develops that. And especially in the sort of final meetup with Ryan towards the end of the game, it's like, the suspense has just been building and building and building, and like it. Unfortunately, once that part is over, I feel like the game kind of goes downhill.
It does, yeah.
But up to that point, it's really really amazing in the atmosphere that they develop.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. I've actually been meaning to replay it for a while, but I really should just play BioShock 2 instead.
You know, I don't know. I feel like BioShock the first was better at creating that atmosphere than the second one is. It's certainly no slouch, and it reuses a lot of the same areas, and the underwater segments in general are just really really cool, and you get a little bit of non-linear exploration, but
better sense of scale in BioShock 2.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I feel like the storytelling itself is probably stronger in the first one.
Oh, easily, like that Sophia Lamb. I don't give a shit about her.
Oh, yeah, that whole storyline was kind of fell flat for me. But I am really looking forward to Infinite.
Me too, holy crap.
Oh, so much. I can't wait for the game to come out. But
should be really fantastic.
But yeah, that was just probably one of my favorite games as far as recent memory goes, of a survival horror game that was actually, like, effective at scaring me and not just making me, like, worry about rations or anything like that.
Right. Do I have enough ammo?
Exactly, which I feel is something that, you know, Resident Evil kind of has a lot of. I'll say right off the bat, I don't really like Resident Evil games that came before 4.
Oh, me neither. God,
I think they're kind of terrible. I understand that they have a lot of fans and whatnot, but I just think that the controls are beyond just clunky and just really, really bad. I've never been a fan of those tank controls where you hold a button and then move the analog stick in the
right
direction you want to walk.
And that, unfortunately, became the standard for the genre after Resident Evil.
Yeah, that is just so broken. It doesn't work. And combine that with pre-rendered backgrounds and fixed cameras, and it's like, forget it. It just does not work. The only game where it's actually worked was the original, and I think maybe the second, Grand Theft Auto. But that was because you had an overhead view, and your point of view never changed.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of okay. It was okay then, but other than that, I've never seen it work. And yet, I can't play any of the games that came before.
Now, in Resident Evil 4 and 5, it still has that tank control. You press left and right to turn the character. But it feels much more fluid because you can run and move left and right at the same time.
Yeah, and it's the fact that you have a
fixed viewpoint.
You have a fixed perspective, and yeah, where it's not constantly changing with the camera.
It took him so long to figure that out.
Yeah, for the life of me, I can't understand why, but yeah.
I will still defend the original Resident Evil. Well, maybe not the original so much. The ones on PS1 are pretty hard to defend at this point, but I am a staunch defender of the remakes, well, the remake on GameCube.
It is excellent, despite the control problems.
I think they look pretty.
there was a control option that I found agreeable. It was sort of like it treated one of the shoulder buttons as sort of a gas pedal, making the tank comparison even more apt. I played through the Resident Evil remake, as I detailed on the site feature that we talked about earlier. I played through the game basically in one sitting. I had a lot of time to kill in a summer. The last summer of my college career, I was a RA in the dorms during the summer, which basically meant I didn't do shit, which was awesome. It was like the last time. It was very consciously to me the very last time in my life where I wouldn't have to do anything most of the time for like 3 whole months.
It was your summer of 69.
Yeah. So the remake launched in like what, May, I think, of 2002.
Yeah.
And I bought it, and like a couple of months after that, I kind of sat on it for a few months, and then I put it in one Friday morning and played it all the way until I was done. I pretty much just stopped for meals and sleeping, and that's how you play a Resident Evil game. Because really, the only way to get past the problems with the inventory management and the control scheme is to let the parts of the game that are good, the visuals, the environment, really, is to let that wash over you completely to the point where it's all you can think about. And that's how that game worked for me. Like, I lived in Spencer Manor for 3 days as far as I was concerned. It was it was a very memorable experience just because that's the way those games have to be played. Otherwise, you're constantly being taken out of the game and being reminded about how many problems the game has on a control scheme level.
Right.
The voice acting wasn't quite as bad in the remake.
It was it was pretty good. It was pretty good. It became the standard for the series after that.
It's fine. You know, the stories themselves have kind of a camp value. I didn't really mind them. I bought the when 4 was about to come out, I bought that that pre-order thing where you you pay. It's basically you get a 2-pack of Resident Evil 0 and Resident Evil Remake. And with that, you got an exclusive demo for Resident Evil 4.
I don't remember that.
It was a deal that I think GameStop had.
Oh, that's why.
And it came in, like, this special cardboard case, and you got, like, all this these bonus little booklets and such. And I think they gave you both games for, like, $30. It was kind of a good deal. And I mostly got it because I wanted to play Resident Evil 4. I just wanted to play it somehow, some way, and I didn't want to be chained to the GameStop kiosk. So,
right.
I bought it and took it home, and I played 4, and I was like, "Oh, this game is amazing!" And then I was like, "Oh, you know what? I'll throw in Remake and 0." You know, I remember not liking it on the PlayStation, but I was like, "Yeah, you know, it's been many years. Maybe now my tastes have changed." And sure enough, I played about 30 minutes to an hour of each, and I was just like, "I can't do it."
I think I didn't. Really, I don't like I didn't Zero really very much at all.
Yeah, I didn't care for Zero. Like, to me, the big appeal of the Resident Evil games is the isolation factor, and putting a second character in that game just kind of ruins it for me.
Yeah, sure. And especially a character who has no lasting effect on the rest of the series.
That too. Yeah.
Actually, the storyline of Zero was kind of wiped under the carpet for Resident Evil 5.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of all built up to go away because we all know Resident Evil 1 has to come around and none of those things can be referenced. So it's sort of built up to just kind of go away.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there are a lot of threads that have just kind of been dropped in a lot of the Resident Evil games. I mean,
Barry.
Can anyone remember? What's that?
Barry's gone.
Oh, yeah, just forget it. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Don't mention it. It just didn't happen.
Well, I know you mentioned you made this sentiment, and it's a common one. I've heard it a lot that you don't like any Resident Evil game that precedes 4 because 4 was when they fixed the series. I like Resident Evil 4, but I don't love it. To me, they took the one thing that I really enjoyed about the series, which was the environment, and they sacrificed it for an action game. And Resident Evil 5 took that to an even greater extent by making the entire thing a mandatory co-op experience.
Well, yeah, that's true. When I say they fixed it, I mean they fixed the gameplay.
It would be great to play Resident Evil 1 with Resident Evil 4 controls.
It would be too easy. It would be way too
easy.
That's
true.
Yeah, it really would be.
It would the way the enemy patterns are set up. It's all basically the reason that the zombies are slow is because it's way too clunky for you to move fast in that environment.
Right. Yeah.
You're not supposed to be able to move. Maybe they developed the control scheme as a point to so that it's like, well, if they can move, you know, easily, then they're just going to be able to run through the game. It'll be too easy.
Well, that was
I think
one
that actually
that was
part of it.
That was one thing I didn't like about the remake is they added those super fast zombies. And there's nothing you can do about them because of the control scheme. You see them running at you, you're like, well, I'm fucked.
Right. Yeah, so they fixed the gameplay, but I can see where you're coming from, Andy, in that you don't like the changes to the environment where it's less of a horror game and more of a survival game.
Yeah, I didn't really find Resident Evil 4 to be scary at all.
It's not.
It's a lot of gore and a lot of, like, you know, guts, and it's more of an action game than anything else.
Yeah.
They made it more into Die Hard and less into, what's a really good, scary movie example? Oh, you know what it is? It's like Alien to Aliens.
There you go. It's perfect example.
We've already made the comparison once for BioShock that the environment is like a character. Sure. I really enjoyed the character of that environment in Resident Evil Remake. Yeah. It was probably one of my favorite characters, if we're going to call it that.
You know, now Lisa Trevor was freaky in the remake.
Yeah, no kidding. The whole crazy Lisa Trevor in the shack.
Yeah, and then you find documents saying how she got that way, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah. I thought the pre-rendered backgrounds in the remake were gorgeous. I thought they did a really good job of not being obviously pre-rendered backgrounds.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed that game. And I was kind of sad to see that. While I enjoyed Resident Evil 4, I had a good time playing it. It wasn't memorable to me, really. I enjoyed it, and now that I'm done with it, I'll never play it again. But every once in a while, I do get the urge to pick up Remake again. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was sort of a perfect gameplay experience at the time. But I've never picked up Resident Evil 5, and I've never really been all that tempted to, because I know what it is. It's Gears of War with an RE skin.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. Hey, Andy, and there's a DLC episode for Resident Evil 5 where you're Jill and Chris, and you basically, the first half of the level that you play is the front half of the manor, of Arklay Manor, Mansion. There are no enemies, but it's very creepy. And because you keep expecting things to happen, you're like, oh, shit, this is where those dogs came out. You know, your nostalgia kind of plays it up. So it's really fun, but it's probably not worth the full package of the game if you don't like Resident Evil 4.
Speaking of games that are not anything at all like Gears of War, one game that I really enjoyed about a year ago when I reviewed it for the site was Silent Hill Shattered Memories on the Wii.
I really want to play that.
That game was just so well crafted. It was really a perfect game for the Wii, too. I know it came out on the PlayStation 2 as well for some stupid reason, but it was really a game that seemed perfectly suited to the Wii. We used the technology on the Wii remote very well as both the flashlight and the cell phone. And it was a really interesting psychological experiment. The way the game sort of profiled you and changed the gameplay experience and the endings, depending on how you answered those questions, and how you played the game. Like depending on which signs you lingered on when you looked at the environment, it would change the way the game unfolded just a little bit here and there. Like if you looked at a picture of cheerleaders with, like, nasty writing on it, it would keep that in mind later on. When it was making decisions on how to treat your character, which is it's an interesting take on it. I'm not going to spoil the ending because it's fantastic, but the game has a really good payoff in the end. It's an interesting story. It doesn't really tie in with Silent Hill at all, other than that's the name of the town. It could have been called anything else and it would still be fine. Mm-hmm. It's a pity it didn't sell more because. God, more people should have played this game. It's a game that gets sorely overlooked when you're looking at a list of really good exclusives on the Wii library.
Well, they kind of just pooped it out, didn't they? They didn't really give it any press.
No, they really didn't. They didn't really try to sell the game at all. And maybe the answer is a re-release on the HD consoles with Move and Kinect support. I don't know. But the game deserves to be seen by more people because it's a really fantastic game.
Now, do you share the complaint that the combat sequences are kind of cheap and tacked on? Like,
you mean the lack of combat sequences?
Well, no, I mean like when the world freezes over, oh, now I have to run, you know?
The comment has been made a couple times before and I sort of agree with it. When you're not in one of those combat sequences, or rather escape sequences is a better name for it, you can't die in the game. There's no death sequences unless you're in one of those types of escape scenes. That said, like, I didn't find the escape scenes to be particularly tense. Well, not that they weren't tense, but they weren't scary. Like, I wasn't scared by those.
Right.
I was scared of the town. I was scared of the environment, the people in the town. That's what genuinely unsettled me. The escape sequences felt cheap. But there's a couple of them that are really effective, and especially one towards the end that's just really well done, and it sort of just almost plays on your frustration with them in general. It's really easy to get lost in those sequences because there is a definitive exit point. And you can look at your map, but you can also be attacked while you're looking at your map, so it's not super handy. You have to pull up your cell phone to look at your map, which is a bit frustrating. Those scenes aren't particularly awesome, but they don't really do much to detract the overall experience for me.
Are there any monsters besides those little kid critters that run after you? Or would that
no.
be telling?
Not really.
That's a shame, because one of the...
None throughout the course of the game that I can remember.
One of the things I love about the Silent Hill series, more than the gameplay, is the creature design. It's always just so wrong. You know, twisted.
Well, the creatures change design as you play the game,
though. Oh, do
they? But there's only really one kind of creature. It's just the design of that creature slowly begins to change as you play the game, depending on how you play it.
Oh, that's cool.
As I understand it.
Well, that's kind of cool.
But I've only played it the once. I lent it to a friend shortly after I finished it, and I've never gotten it back, which is saddening to me. I really need to get it back and play it again this fall when Halloween starts rolling around.
There you go.
It's a great game to freak yourself out. This is another game where I locked myself in a dark room and played it in no fewer than like 3-hour chunks. But wasn't quite the perfect weekend experience, but it was close.
I'll have to play that. Cool. Definitely.
Yeah. I definitely suggest it. I think it's pretty fantastic.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, Zach, didn't you want to mention Dead Space?
I do want to mention Dead Space. That's been my favorite horror game in the last few years. Dead Space 2 just came out, but it doesn't have the same fear factor that the first one does for me. What the first one does really well is, just like you guys have been saying, the atmosphere and the location are the biggest factors in making it scary. You know, it's all these... Have you guys played Dead Space?
I played about half of it.
I've played a little bit of 2, but I didn't play the first one.
Okay.
I played about half of the first game.
Yeah. There are some there are some really well-executed, scripted scenes in the first Dead Space that really make you on edge for the rest of the game. Like, killing the... Actual combat is not all that scary, because if you have enough ammo, you can kill anything. It is a little scary when you're aiming at one monster, another one pops out of a vent behind you and attacks you, but that's a cheap scare.
Right.
You know, there are sequences where the lights go out and you're walking down the hall and all you've got as a light is your gun sight, and and a little creature scuttles past you, above you, through a vent, and you can see it, and you're like, ee! You know, and...
Sure.
And there's... The music is so well done in Dead Space. It's all this really tense... string music, and it just really gets you going. So,
what do you think about the complaint that I've heard levied against that game, where the music gives away all the scary parts?
I wouldn't say that at all. I mean,
that's what I've heard, is that like the monsters don't come out unless the music's going.
No, that's not true at all. No.
Okay.
There are many times where they just build atmosphere, and that's what I love about the game. What disappoints me, the only thing that disappoints me about the atmosphere, is that towards the end of the game, especially in the last level, they could have made the last level really incredibly scary, but it's kind of a gauntlet of shoot all these bad guys and don't die. They could have made it a really tense final chapter by including very few or no enemies. But they decided to go the gauntlet route. And the second game actually has some really kind of freaky moments, too, because your character is kind of losing his mind for the whole game. So there'll be parts where you'll walk into a room, and suddenly the camera will turn strategically, and your dead girlfriend is right there, and there's blood dripping out of her eyes, and you're like, holy crap.
Right.
You know.
Nice.
There's some good stuff like that, but atmospherically, I think the first one is better than the second one.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get around to playing that game. I played the demo of it back when the first one was about to come out, and I really, really liked it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, it's got to be dirt cheap by now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it is. Absolutely.
It definitely is. I found the first game a bit too difficult for my tastes. About halfway through the game, I was out of money, I was out of ammo, I was low on health, and I was dying a lot.
Yeah, there are definitely some choke points in the game.
So I think what I really need to do is just go back and play it on easy so I can actually enjoy it.
Yeah. Mm. Another thing that they do really well is they play with shadows. So sometimes you'll think it's a monster when it's just a piece of swinging machinery, you know?
Sure.
I really like stuff like that. That's what really freaked me out about Doom 3. You know, people give Doom 3 a lot of a hard time because it's just a monster fest, monster closets and whatnot. But,
sure.
But, you know,
there's some good lighting effects in that game.
There's excellent lighting effects. And when you...
Well,
when you,
there are great rubber effects in that game.
The what?
There are great rubber effects in that everything is made to look like rubber.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That kind of takes away from it. But I played that game with two other guys, and they are both terrified of scary movies. I don't even know why they decided to watch Doom 3. But when you have two guys who are just clawing at their pant legs the whole time, it kind of starts to rub off on you.
Sure.
But, no doubt.
Yeah, that was a really effective game for lighting, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, horror games. Check them out. I'd also like to give an honorable mention to Silent Hill 2 for psychological horror.
Oh, my God, yes. That's a great game.
Fucked up stuff in that game.
I just played that game about a year and a half ago, mainly due to Zach's recommendation in the forums, actually, before I was even on staff. And, yeah, absolutely love that game. I played it on the Xbox 360 when the backwards compatibility is a little bit broke on it, but...
Oh, yeah?
Hmm.
But it was still a lot of fun. It was definitely very unnerving at times. There's a point towards the middle of that game where you're exploring a prison, and you come across like a tunnel downwards, like a ladder to go downwards. It's more like a sewer hole almost in the middle of a building. And basically... you keep going down and down and down. Like, you get... There's probably, like, five or six... There's, like, five or six basements in the sewer. And, like, the basements get smaller and smaller to the point where you're just going down into a room that has another ladder going down. And it just, every time you get down there and see that there's nothing to do but keep going down, it just... It's effective at freaking you out. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Like, when do I reach the bottom of this godforsaken town? It's...
Very cool, man.
It's awesome.
And
very good game.
The female character, that crazy woman, not the woman who you think
Maria.
Yeah, is it Maria? Not the woman who is okay, you know, but gets brutally murdered multiple times. The crazy woman who's always holding a knife. She's the first one you meet in the game in the graveyard. Every scene with her is just like, what are you gonna do?
And the kid is creepy in that one, too.
Yeah, the kid, I forgot about the kid, but everyone's creepy in that game. And then the final boss is friggin' creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, I've heard nothing but really good things about that game.
Yeah, and 3 is an excellent one, too, although not as creepy for the same reasons.
I haven't actually played any of the mainline Silent Hill games. I've only played two spinoffs. I've played Shattered Memories and Silent Hill 2, but neither of those have anything to do.
Mainline.
It's mainline, but it doesn't have anything to do with the arcing story that takes place in Silent Hill 1 and 3,
as I understand it. That's true.
I've just heard that the room kind of sucks.
The room does suck. It started out as a different franchise.
I've heard good things about the room, actually.
The room has problems. I mean, if you like Silent Hill, like, give it a shot. But
I want them to remake the first one in a way that I can play it, because I don't really want to play a PS1 survival horror game.
No.
But I want to experience the franchise, so, like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Silent Hill 3 I would be down playing, because, I mean, 2 was fine. But, man, those mid-90s survival horror games on PS1 are just kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah, 3 is really good, yeah. I like it, but I like 2 more because it's freakier.
Well, let's move on to the next anniversary. We have the Resident Evil 15th anniversary, as we've been talking about, but there's also another anniversary this month. I don't know when the actual day or week is, because I couldn't find it online, but the Street Fighter 2... 20-year anniversary.
Damn.
The arcade game came to consoles in March of 91, and so we're putting up a feature on the site this week about the impact that game had on the gaming landscape, both home console-wise and just from the standpoint of the different genres that the game has sort of shaped, or rather, the one genre the game has completely completely shaped, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to spend too much time talking about that now because the feature is on the site. We can go read it, and we just spent half an hour talking about the last feature. So, but I will say that I'm a big fan of Street Fighter II. I played a lot of it when I was a kid, and I'm not a fighting game guy. Like, I don't sit there and memorize combos, and if I can't compete in a tournament, save my life. But I'm the kid that when I was a kid, I was the best among my friends at Street Fighter II. So I thought I was hot shit. Sure. Until I learned that there's people out there that have like 100 hit combos and whatnot. I really like Street Fighter 2. I'm happy to see that it's still relevant today, even if it's sort of a niche.
Right.
I did pick up Street Fighter Alpha 2 on the Virtual Console. Man, that's not very good.
Well, especially because it
was ported from the PlayStation to Super Nintendo, if I remember correctly.
It must have been, because there are ridiculous loading times. There's like a 4-second pause between when it brings up the game and when it says fight.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
I could be remembering Alpha 3 by accident, but I'm pretty sure that was a PS1 game. Or originally an arcade game, obviously, then they ported it to PS1.
Yeah.
And then they ported it again to the Super Nintendo. And yeah, I think it was probably just not a very good game.
No, unfortunately, it's not.
No, for me personally, I was a Genesis owner.
Hey, I was too.
Yeah, but and while the Street Fighter 2 it was Turbo that they brought to Genesis.
It was Special Champion Edition.
Special Champion Edition. Okay, it was perfectly fine on Genesis.
Is the six button controller really the best one to play that game on?
It is fantastic.
I got the two six
button controllers and the Genesis version of Street Fighter 2 for Christmas when I was in 7th or 8th grade, and I played that game for hours and hours and hours.
But the thing for me was, I was kind of a Mortal Kombat guy, so now I know that Street Fighter 2 is way better, but at the time I was like, whatever.
I think there's some value to Mortal Kombat. Like, I loved Mortal Kombat when I was a kid, too. I played both of them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat's an easier game to play.
It is a lot easier, and I think that's probably why it appealed to me. For my money, I still think that Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 is an amazing fighting game.
I remember playing that on it's Super Nintendo.
It was on Genesis. That's what I played it on, but I think it was on Super Nintendo as well.
Yeah.
If they would put out Mortal Kombat 2 on the Virtual Console, I would be all over that.
I'm shocked they haven't.
Well, if Ultimate 3 is on Xbox Live.
Ooh.
Yeah, I have Mortal Kombat 2 on my PS3, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why they haven't really put out a arcade-perfect port of the first Mortal Kombat game, except for on, like, compilations and as, like, bonus unlockables.
Huh.
Yeah. I'd love to have, like, an arcade port of the first game, because the home console ports of the first game were pretty shabby.
Yeah.
They are bad, but I played the original one at the arcade, and it's not as good as the second one. It's
no, really it's
good.
Not.
No, two is,
but
two
I
is
still
my favorite.
Loved it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think 2 is really where it came into its own.
I had the PC port of the first game, and that was actually a pretty accurate translation. Yeah. And I played a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, much like Street Fighter, which really found its home as this. Have you guys ever played the original Street Fighter?
I played it in arcades, yeah.
As a curiosity.
I played it also as a curiosity on an emulator. I mean, go ahead, whatever, sue me. And yeah, it is as bad as everyone says.
it's a brawler, from what I can recall, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
no, it's a 1v1 fighter. It's just horrible.
Yeah, it's really limited in its control scheme. It has similar controls to a brawler. And yeah, it's just
so it's like Street Fighter 2, like the first Fatal Fury. God, that was bad.
I guess so. I never played the first Fatal Fury.
Yeah, the first Fatal Fury was pretty bad.
But I've played Street Fighter 2 in probably, I don't know, 8 different versions. I played the original Street Fighter 2. I played Turbo. I played, the original, I guess, the World Warrior. I've played the Super HD Remix.
I've considered buying that. That looks sexy.
The sprites look really good. The backgrounds are not good. The backgrounds are, they're like, oh, well, we're going to make them HD, but we're also going to make them look, like, really generic, and the art is just not that good.
That's
I didn't notice that. I have the game. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they just did. I don't know, for whatever. I mean, to be fair, the backgrounds and the audience members in the first game aren't really that awesome either. But
yeah,
you just notice it more in HD. The fighters themselves look great.
Yeah,
yeah, they do. They really do.
They look fantastic.
Would you say it's better than Street Fighter IV, which I could not get into for the life of me?
I mean, I love Street Fighter IV, so I don't know if my opinion is valid, but
I think the Street Fighter Turbo Remix is better made in some ways. There are a lot of little interface things that kind of bug me about Street Fighter IV, like, for instance, the ability to easily assign your own buttons by just pressing the button. Like, you go into the setup screen and you just
hit
the buttons in the order you want versus, like, scrolling through a list of buttons. Sure. Little things like that were really annoying in Street Fighter IV, but I think the HD Remix was a really, really solid Street Fighter title. I personally agree.
I don't necessarily know if I'd call it the best version of Street Fighter II, but on consoles available now, I'd say it's probably the best, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
I got into the King of Fighters a little bit when I was in college. King of Fighters 98 I played a little bit, but
it really matter which year it was?
No, it doesn't. I actually just got the King of Fighters collection from Zach.
Yeah.
He did a little trade. Wow, that does not hold up.
And it's shocking how similar all the games are. I mean, even to the same sprites.
I don't know if I'd call it shocking, but It's pretty bad. I gotta hand it to those guys. They have found a way to pull the wool over everyone's eyes year after year.
Well, yeah. I mean, usually in different games, in other fighting games, like in Soul Calibur, they do this. They at least tweak the input commands for moves. Well, not so in King of Fighters. Like, if you go in there knowing how to use Mai in 1994. You can go back in 1997 and still know all the moves.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember when people were like, oh, man, are you going to get Art of Fighting on Virtual Console? I'm like, why would I want to play King of Fighters with half the characters?
Yeah, that's an awful idea.
You know?
Well, let's move on from Street Fighter II and on to some listener mail. We got a couple of letters this last week, so I thought we'd read through them. And I'll grab the first one. This is from David Becker, and he writes, "Hi, Newscast. Since you guys seem to be big fans of Geometry Wars 2, I suggest that you check out the Radiant Games games. They're a bunch of games on Xbox indie games, kind of like the BitTrip series. Especially Fireball, which is like pacifism mode, should interest you. Each game costs $1, so you can get all of them with an 800-point card and still have a lot of points left.
Nice.
The only downside is that Microsoft does not allow indie games to have leaderboards for silver members.
Seriously?
Something we had talked about a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just the indie games. I think the regular arcade games can do leaderboards with silver. I don't think you have to have gold for that for the non-indie Xbox Live games.
Can I take this opportunity to bitch about how the Xbox Live Marketplace is set up?
Please do.
It's awful. I mean, it's bad on... It's bad on PSN too, but on Xbox it's so split up.
It's no Wii Shop Channel.
No, and it's no DSi Shop Channel.
Yeah, I think it is kind of hard to find what you're looking for. They don't do a really good job of helping you find the obvious things. Like, basically, if it's not a featured item, you have to browse for it by letter.
Right. It's also not obvious what's new.
Yeah,
they do have the what's new thing, but it doesn't really seem like they put what's new in order.
Right.
Right.
They sort of do it by what's new and also what's popular.
Yeah.
So it just seems really it's not like I can just be like, oh, what's new this week, and the newest two things are there. It's more like, oh, the same things are here, but if I look through this list, I might find what's new this week. It doesn't really work right. I'll definitely you know, agree with you on that point. But as far as these games go, yeah, I'm always Xbox Live Arcade, despite its menu dysfunction, is one of my favorite platforms. And
I haven't heard of these Radiant Games titles.
Neither have I. Yeah, I'll definitely
look into it because I love Geometry Wars 2, something fierce.
Oh, so do I.
I need to get back into it.
I remember I was that summer of arcade, that whole summer of arcade that they had that year. I think it was 2008. was amazing. Let me explain you some lineup.
Drop some science on us now.
Yeah. We had Castle Crashers. Bionic Commando Rearmed. Geometry Wars 2. And there were Braid. And there was something else. I don't remember what
Braid
the
is overrated.
Was. Braid is overrated, but it's not a bad game. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a lineup to take lightly.
No, it's such a great lineup.
And I
well, Microsoft's good at hyping their games and getting them some publicity, which is something that the WiiWare has never really pulled off.
Oh no, never, absolutely not. Summer Arcade is something that I look forward to every year.
Yeah.
Because there's usually at least one or two games that I really really want. I found Diamonds in the Rough, like Trials HD there, which is such a good game that not enough people enjoy. Oh God, such a good game. But I digress. That summer, Johnny Metz was like, "You got to get Geometry Wars 2." And I'm like, "I don't know. I played the first one. I wasn't really that big of a fan." He's like, No. You got to get Geometry Wars 2."
Yep.
And I was like, "All right, fine." And then I became locked in a heated war of scores with one Jonathan Metz, of which I was obliterated handily. Because I cannot put up with Jonathan Metz, Mike Sklenz, Dan Dormer. Many people on my Xbox Live friend list are just like relentless score hounds, and if they get a whiff that you might be within spitting distance of their score, they will play it nonstop to make sure this doesn't happen.
I mentioned this last week on the podcast, but I've been chasing Johnny Metz's pacifism score with every ounce of my gaming passion for like 2.5 years now. Him and I, he would put up a score, and then I would get within like sniffing distance of it, and then he would double it. And he did that like 3 different times. Before he even knew who I was, because I just added him because I was a listener of RFN, and he happened to add me back.
Yeah.
Like before I was even on staff, I was chasing down Johnny Metz's pacifism scores, and at a certain point, he topped 100 million, and that was that.
Yeah, eventually you just give up because you have to. But yeah, that I definitely absolutely adore Geometry Wars 2. It's funny how in Geometry Wars 2, playing on a bigger or larger screen can actually help you or hurt you depending on the mode. Where in something like the classic mode, I feel like having a smaller screen helps because you can keep your eye on more of the action at the same time.
I think in pacifism mode, the bigger screen helps because
I found
when I got closer to the television, I did better because I have a kind of a small TV.
Sure.
So what you have to do is buy two different TVs, two different Xboxes.
Yes. And then switch off. Yes, exactly. That is the only true way to play Geometry Wars 2. But definitely thanks to David for sending in these games. I definitely want to check them out.
I will play them and report back next week.
Hey, look at that.
You have my word.
Awesome.
I'm still gunning for, hey, is this unusual? I got an email saying I had got like 100 points.
You might have just been gifted for, like, Microsoft has these weird things where if you meet a certain requirement, like you played this game or whatever, you just get 100 points.
Bizarre.
That might be it. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to save those up for Beyond Good and Evil.
Sure, yeah. If you want, I'll read this next one.
Go for it.
Well, Adel Vega writes, are dead pixels going to be more prevalent with the 3DS because Nintendo is rushing it to the market? Would a dead pixel on the top screen potentially ruin the 3D effect? I remember my first DS Fat had a dead pixel and Nintendo did exchange it for me, but I still worry 3DS will have a lot more of these problems. I can put your worries to rest right now, Adolf. Yes, Nintendo is rushing the 3DS to market, but dead pixels probably won't be a big problem, just because that's really more of a display issue, which isn't really Nintendo.
It's not a design flaw, it's a manufacturing flaw.
Right. So if that happened, I believe it's Panasonic who's providing these screens, right?
That sounds right, but I'm not really sure.
Okay. If there were dead pixels, that would be because Panasonic fucked up, not Nintendo. So, then Nintendo being like, we wanted to rush it to market now or later, doesn't really matter, whatever. It would really rely on Panasonic's production schedule.
What we could be more prone to is, like, hinge cracking like we had on the original DS Lite.
Absolutely.
Things like that. We're not going to get like a Red Ring situation on the 3DS. I don't think that'll happen, but that's the kind of, that's the kind of thing that happens when you rush a system to market.
I cannot imagine that happening. I don't believe there are bad heat sinks in the 3DS.
Yeah, probably not. But just like a fundamental design flaw that was overlooked that causes a lot of problems. That's the kind of thing you come across, but not
faulty,
specific defects like a broken pixel.
Yeah, faulty buttons or perhaps a hinge crack or something like that.
Yeah.
These things could possibly happen. I personally think having the 3DS made in three pieces seems like a bad idea, but that's just me.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one.
I think that's just inviting room to getting like dust caught under there. And, you know, I just think it's going to be a huge problem. But hey, whatever. Well, time will tell whether I'm right or wrong.
More pieces you have, the more pieces can separate.
Precisely, yeah. The less moving pieces you have in there, the better.
Wait, are you saying that one or more layers sticks out beyond the others?
No, but you can, the three layers are very clearly defined, and there is definitely
a crease.
Yeah, there's a crease. There's a defined crease there.
There's a seam.
Yeah. And so I'm just saying that
when
you're going to add, if you put added pressure on one of these seams, eventually one of these things is going to give.
Right.
Especially with a handheld device like a 3DS, because that's going to get under a lot more, a lot more day-to-day rough and abuse. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I played the 3DS. We had a meeting with Nintendo where we got some hands-on time with it, and it was the build quality seemed fine. I didn't see any dead pixels, so that's good.
But you didn't like the 3D, right?
I did not like the 3D, but that had nothing to do with the display. I mean, it does have something to do with the display, but that's more of a choice of taste than anything else. Yeah. I don't think it was running faulty. It was just I don't care for 3D.
Well, I guess. Yeah.
Now, as far as whether or not dead pixels could affect the 3D, I think that's a real possibility. And dead pixels are a possibility with any LCD screen.
90% of screens are going to have one dead pixel or more.
Right.
It's going to happen. You know, if you see one dead pixel, don't freak out. If you see a giant cluster of dead pixels, then sure, you have grounds for replacing your system. But I don't necessarily think it would ruin the 3D effect.
There'll be 3D dead pixels.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think what he's worried about is that if there are noticeable dead pixels, it'll be like in one area of the screen is not in 3D and it might throw off his vision. I don't think that's a problem because dead pixels, I mean, remember, you would need a significant amount of dead pixels for your eye to notice casually.
And it's not like the pixels are adding things to the picture. It's just part of it's not lit up. So
exactly.
It's not like you're going to have extra things that shouldn't be there. That's more likely to ruin the 3D effect than just the removal of what once was there.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it'll be fine, Adolf.
I'm more worried about the strain of looking between the 3D top screen and the 2D lower screen.
It was not an issue for me. But then the game that I played for the most, Kid Icarus, has you using the bottom screen as a targeting mechanism.
I see.
So you're sort of like how it is in Hunters, in Metroid Prime Hunters.
Yeah.
So you're not really looking at the bottom screen too much anyway.
Gotcha.
That could be an issue, though, I would think. I mean, maybe not. We'll see.
When I did have to look down, it didn't feel weird. That's all I'll say.
That's good.
Yeah. My big problem with the 3DS is that you have to keep a constant viewing angle and you can't change perspectives without completely ruining the 3D effect. I think that's the biggest design flaw.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
For me personally, I have no issue with just turning the 3D off at all times.
Do you think that's just me? Does the viewing angle is it more forgiving with less 3D? Like you turn that slider down or something?
Because it changes the distance between the two screens that are inside the system.
Right.
So, the lower you have it down, I guess the wider range of movement you have, or the more forgiving the screens will be. But I find it's the most forgiving when you just turn the 3D off. So that's what I'm going to go with. That's just me personally. It's a taste thing. The average person might feel differently.
Sure, sure.
Luckily, they've given us a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Precisely. Yeah, you're not forced to go with 3D, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Thanks to Adolf Vega and David Becker for writing in to the newscast. If you want to write into the newscast, you can do so at newscast@NintendoWorldReport.com. We'd love to hear from you. We love getting emails. It confirms to us that people actually pay attention to our show.
People listen to us.
Always a nice thought. But that's all the newscast we got for you this week. So, Carl, you should do your pimping.
Oh, yes, crosstalk.com.
What's that?
I've said it many times. Well, I'll tell you, Zach. I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's the home of your favorite alternative podcast. Basically, our one rule at Crosstalk is no video games. we talk about it plenty elsewhere. So when we do come around to doing our podcast at Crosstalk, it's like, let's talk about our other interests, whether those are movies, music, comics, sports, what have you. We've got it all. So whatever you like, you'll find something to like at Crosstalk. Just this last week, Andy was on Crosstalk Presents, our thoughts on the iPad 2, along with myself and Jonathan Metz. Let's see, Neil Ronahan has guested a couple times.
It was a good time.
And
I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. We were glad to have you.
Carl. Michael Austin.
I'm here.
Better Carl than...
Hello. Can you not hear me?
I thought I was gone, because that seems to be what happens all the time.
I can hear you.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, back. Hey, you're back.
Hey, I could hear you the entire time.
Oh, nice. Welcome back.
That was bizarre. Okay, where was I? Okay. So, Neil Ronahan has guested on Crosstalk Comics a couple times, talking about the DC Animated Universe, which was two really, really good shows.
Really good shows, yeah.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you used that Justice League music. So good.
We did. I used it just for you, Zach, because I know you wanted to hear it. So, but we also did include the terrible Justice League Unlimited music, which is also just for you. Plenty of good stuff. Box Office Poison includes myself and a host of other Radio Free Nintendo alums and current people. Tons of stuff at Crosstalk, so go on over to Crosstalk, that's spelled Crosstalk.com.
When are you going to have that Karen Starr episode?
Oh, the show all about Power Girl? Probably never, because I don't care about Power Girl.
Ninja Turtle episode.
Yeah, I can just sum up in one word, boobs.
That's part of it.
You've got Zach's attention.
Right, believe me, I think Zach already had her on his radar. But, check it out.
Definitely good stuff on there.
Before we sign off for the night, I do want to just take a moment to express the condolences of the newscast, myself, and all the rest of us for anybody affected by the tsunami and
absolutely.
In Japan. That was just
shocking. When we came back from PAX on Friday, I believe, we were watching the news all about it, and we couldn't believe it. It was really, really crazy.
Yeah, some of those videos definitely were just scary.
Oh, yeah. Very, very unseemly business. If you have any family there, we offer our condolences. It turns out AT&T is offering free long-distance calling to Japan for the rest of the month.
Wow.
So if you were not aware of that and you have AT&T and you have family there, absolutely take advantage of that.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And luckily, none of the correspondents that we have from NWR over in Japan –
oh yes,
we're harmed in the disaster, and that's always lovely to see. I know people who know people in Japan, and they seem to have pulled through to a one so far. But it's just it's really devastating to look over at the video footage and just see houses being swept away through the river. It's something else.
It is.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, a lot of people are sometimes not sure what charities to donate to, and I always say the same thing: Doctors Without Borders.
Oh yeah,
there you go.
That's always a good one. It's always going to the right place. I believe what is the Doctors Sans Frontiers? I think is the other one. It's the same organization. It has different names depending on the country, but it is absolutely a fantastic charity, and you can bet that they'll be there in Japan. So check it out.
Nice,
awesome.
Yeah,
and that's a newscast. Thanks to everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next Saturday.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.